Friends, before I say anything else, I'm sure I speak on behalf of all Liberal Democrats when I say that our hearts and condolences go out to the family and friends of Alan Henning and David Haynes for their tragic loss. These were good men. These were good men. In the work they did, they stood for hope and compassion, the things that everybody in this room believes are more important than anything else. We have to take on the cowards who took their lives. We have to defeat their barbarity to help protect the millions of people who now live under the threat and fear of these merciless killers. Britain will not be intimidated. We will not be divided. We will not allow this brutal organisation to pervert Islam. And to ISIL, we say this. All you've done is unite the people of Britain, Muslim and non-Muslim, people of all faiths and none, around a single aim. All you've done is give the British forces who are being deployed to Iraq, some of the best professionals in the world, a clear single objective. We and our allies, including in the Middle East, are going to find you. We're going to destroy your bases. We will cut off your supplies, isolate you from your support, and for the sake of peace, democracy and the freedom of all of those you terrorise, we are not going to stop until it is done. And let's also take this opportunity to pay tribute to our armed forces, including the RAF personnel who are being deployed over Iraq, as well as the many men and women helping fight dangerous threats across the world. Our immense gratitude should go without saying, but it's important that we say it too. Thank you. And thanks. And I'd like to thank all of you and thank everybody who's been involved in organising such a successful conference. Thank you. Thanks for all of those of you behind the scenes who've prepared the ground for this great conference. And I think there are a few people I would like on your behalf to give a special vote of thanks to. Because when I was thinking before coming to Glasgow, how are we going to use this conference to really communicate to people in the country that it's only the Liberal Democrats that can build a stronger economy and a fairer society, where there's opportunity for everyone. I've just really seen the hard work that some particular people have gone into to deliver that message more effectively than we could possibly have hoped for. So on your behalf, I would like to say a special thanks to two people. Thank you, Ed Miliband. Thank you, George Osborne. Because, let's face it, they couldn't have been more helpful than even if they tried. It's as if Ed Miliband had rung me before the conference and said, hey, Nick, what can I do to help the Liberal Democrats really underline the point that Labour can't be trusted with the economy? And I went, how about, Ed, if you forgot to say anything about the deficit in your speech? And he did it. Or George Osborne rang me and said, Nick, what can I really do to help you really drive home that message that the Conservatives can't be trusted to create a fair society? And I said, what would be tremendously helpful, George, is if you singled out in your speech that it would be the working-age poor that would pick up the tab for the mistakes made by the bankers in the past. And he did it! So thank you. Thank you, Ed Miliband. Thank you, George Osborne. I don't think there's anybody in the country after this political conference season who's under any illusions now that the only party in British politics that stands for a stronger economy and a very good to deliver opportunity for everyone is us, the Liberal Democrats. Talk about on message. That was great. That was really good. Al Murray, you know, he of pub landlord fame, said a great thing on Trafalgar Square in the days leading up to the Scottish referendum. I was there in Trafalgar Square in the crowds with thousands of others, and what he said really stuck in my mind. He said that there is something wonderfully vague about being British. After all, he said, that's why we call ourselves Brit-ish. And he said, of course, it's true. It's true. You can be Brit-ish, as well as Scottish, English, Northern Irish, Welsh-ish. At the same time, you can be black, white, Asian, Indian, African, European, mixed, not mixed. You can be gay, straight, bisexual, transgender, Christian, Muslim, Jewish, Hindu, Sikh, atheist. The Scottish referendum was not only momentous because it reaffirmed Scotland's place in the United Kingdom, and for that I will be eternally grateful, for the unbelievable efforts of Willie and Alistair and Joe and Danny and Mike and Charles and Ming and the whole Scottish team. Thank you, all of you. The Scottish referendum was also brilliant because it forced us to hold up a mirror and think about who we are. Four nations, yes, but also 64 million people with identities which are distinct yet overlapping. Because these isles of ours are among the most diverse and inclusive in the world. And yet, something very un-British is taking root in our politics. A growing movement of people who want to pull us apart. Salmon, Farage, the bitter tribalism of left and right. In their different ways, they're all doing the same thing. A growing pick-a-side politics in a world of us versus them. Worried about your job, your business, your children's future, your way of life. No matter. Just blame Europe, Brussels, foreigners, immigrants, the English, the South, professional politicians, Westminster, big business, anyone claiming benefits, even onshore wind farms. You see, life is so simple when you know who or what to blame. It's so seductive. It's beguiling. And that much may even be proved tomorrow if the people of Clacton give the UK Independence Party an MP. But resentment, the politics of fear, it doesn't pay the bills or create a single job. Claiming to address people's acute anxiety about the modern world, it provides nothing but the false comfort of grievance. Dressed up as the politics of hope, it is in fact a council of despair. Why do you think I took on Nigel Farage in the TV debates in the European elections? Because I thought it would be easy. Me defending Britain's membership of the European Union, him merrily bashing Brussels. No. I did it for the same reason this party must now come out fighting. Because someone has to stand up for the liberal Britain in which we and millions of decent, reasonable people still believe. For tolerance. For tolerance. For tolerance. Compassion. Openness. Unity. The values this party holds so dear. By the way, the really frightening thing about the preparation for those debates was the way in rehearsal in which Tim Farron was so convincingly brilliant at copying Nigel Farage. He's got a purple tie on, look! Labour won't defend those values. Even after 4 years in opposition, Labour have nothing to say or have forgotten to say anything of any value on the economy. The Tories won't either. We heard all we needed to know last week. Compassionate conservatism is dead and buried. If the Liberal Democrat voice is marginalised in British politics, our country will be meaner, poorer and weaker as a result. We must not and cannot let that happen. So we must make our voice heard. Now, that's, of course, not easy these days. Disenchantment and anger towards the political class is now at an all-time high, and for a lot of people, we're included in that. The British people no longer feel an automatic deference to their politicians, and that's a good thing. Authority everywhere is challenged. And in what might be possibly the least fashionable statement made by any leader, party leader this conference season, politicians of every party have fed this growing cynicism by exaggerating and overstating what governments can do. We've all done it. I've been there. When I apologise for the disappointment and anger caused by our inability to scrap tuition fees, I knew we could never, ever make that mistake again. And we won't. We understand that political parties must show by doing. Our promise of more must be built on a record of delivery, not just words. So if you meet someone who doesn't believe we'll raise the personal allowance to £12,500, tell them how we've already raised it to £10,500. If they're not persuaded that we can help young people with their travel costs to college, tell them we've created more apprenticeships than any government since the war. If they're cynical about our promises to help with young children, tell them we're the first party ever to start providing free support for two-year-olds across the country, tax-free childcare and free school meals for infants, and all of it while fixing our broken public finances so they can be sure we'll finish balancing the books fairly too. Danny said it all and set it all out on Sunday. Eliminating the deficit in the first 3 years of the next Parliament, and then bringing debt down steadily and sustainably. Running a budget that is balanced overall, and this is crucial, doing it in a way that allows us to invest in Britain's creaking infrastructure too. The Liberal Democrats will borrow less than Labour, but will cut less than the Tories. We'll finish the job, but we'll finish it in a way that is fair. And just as we are refusing to saddle our children with mountains of debt, we're determined to hand them on a clean planet too. Both parties in this government, both, promised back then that we would stick to our green commitments. But it has taken constant pressure from the Liberal Democrats, not least Ed Davey, to hold the Tories to their word. And I can tell you now that a sustainable environment will remain at the heart of our vision for Britain's future. It's not green crap to us. A plan that is credible. A party which has learnt from our mistakes. A party proud to have delivered on the commitments we made. On the front page of our last manifesto, remember this? Remember those four commitments? And a whole lot more. The biggest change in income tax in a generation, designed and delivered by Lib Dems. The biggest overhaul of our pension system, designed and delivered by Lib Dems. The biggest amount of money going to early years education every year, more than any previous government, designed and delivered by Lib Dems. The biggest shake-up of parental leave, revolutionising the rules for mothers who want to work and fathers who want to stay at home, designed and delivered by Lib Dems. The biggest ever commitment to renewable energy, designed and delivered by Lib Dems. And one of the biggest, proudest achievements for all of us, giving gay couples the same right to marry as everyone else, designed and delivered by Lib Dems. And that... And that, my friends, that is an extraordinary record from anyone, let alone a party that had never been in government before, let alone at a time of upheaval and strife. So when you meet people who still aren't sure about us, ask them this. How will you judge us? By the one policy we couldn't deliver in government, or by the countless policies we did deliver in government. Fixing Britain's shattered economy, making sure the recovery spreads to every part of the UK, cutting taxes for millions of people, investing in young children and protecting Britain's schools. Judge us on that record. By the 4 years we worked tirelessly to make sure public services are safeguarded for future generations. The environment, safeguarded for future generations too. Privacy, protected. Civil liberties, defended. Older people, treated with dignity. And all children, from before they even start at school, given a chance so that they can all live out their dreams and all live their lives in full. Judge us on that record. And while this party has learnt from our mistakes, can the same be said of our opponents? Ed Miliband is now promising a new nirvana. Everyone will be well off, no one will be out of pocket, we don't need to cut government spending, and the public finances will be miraculously fixed. Sounds brilliant. How does he intend to deliver this? Well, in his last conference, he promised a rise in the minimum wage by 2020, which was already going to happen, a one-year limit on the increase in child benefit, which is already in place, and a cut in ministerial pay, which this government introduced in our first week in office. This is a man who was part of the government which wasted their chance, ruined the economy, destroying jobs and slashing incomes, and yet not a single word on the deficit. A man who is part of the government which obliterated trust in our immigration system, and yet not a word on how you rebuild it. So much for the radical plan from the official opposition. David Cameron and George Osborne, meanwhile, say, don't worry, immigration can be slashed, human rights redrawn, taxes lowered, the NHS protected, and we can have all the good bits of being in Europe while opting out of all the bad bits we don't like. Every worry, they say, can be fixed with a big wave of the Union Jack. So how do they intend to deliver that? Well, they've quietly ditched their commitment to reduce net migration to tens of thousands. Conservative ministers have dragged their feet in implementing Lib Dem border controls. They want to scrap the universal human rights Brits have enjoyed since the days of Winston Churchill, and they're prepared to jeopardise Britain's membership of the European Union and our prosperity with it just in order to appease their backbenchers. So much for a credible plan from the Conservative Party. And most astonishingly of all, they have chosen to single out the working age poor to bear the brunt of the final years of deficit reduction, while refusing to ask the super rich to make a single additional contribution. That's the people scraping by on the minimum wage, the job seekers who found themselves temporarily down on their luck, the men and women trying to earn their way out of poverty, often working more than one job. And given the Conservatives are not planning a single tax increase, how do you think they'll pay for all their spending commitments? They will have no choice but to cut the services they have not protected, like social care, policing, education, right to the bone. No wonder they've stopped claiming that we're all in it together. Say what you will about the Liberal Democrats, we may no longer be the untainted party as we were by the freedom of opposition. I may no longer be the fresh-faced outsider. But we still stand for a different kind of politics. Treating people like adults. Not shirking the difficult dilemmas this country faces, but confronting them head on. Not pretending there's a magic wand answer to every problem when there isn't. Not doing things just because they're popular. not being afraid to court controversy when we have to stand up for something we believe, trying every day to do what lies at the heart of politics at its best. Decent people, driven by decent values, resolving problems which can only be resolved together for the good of all. So our mission now is to give people a reason to reject bitter us-and-them politics, to shun the politics of blame and fear, and to choose something better. And to do that, we have to provide the one thing that so many people across Britain still lack, yet crave: opportunity. Government can't do everything for you. It can't make life perfect, and no one should pretend it can. But government can strive to level the playing field so that you and your family can look to your future and see the chance to get on. No matter who you are, opportunity for everyone. If you can see that you have a fair chance to get on in life, you don't need to look for someone to blame. If you give people a sense of fair play, the power to shape their own lives and that of their communities, the chance to fulfill their talents, pursue their aspirations, regardless of the circumstances of their birth, the anger, the powerlessness will wane, and the hope of a better future can take root. After the London riots 3 years ago, I commissioned some research into why some people had rioted and others had not. And I'll never forget hearing about the young men and women who had told the researchers, of course I didn't riot, because they wanted to apply for apprenticeships. They'd seen jobs they wanted, and they didn't want to ruin their chances. You see, give people a future and they won't trash the present. Give people hope and they turn their backs on fear. And yet Britain is still a place where opportunity is handed down like an heirloom, not spread around like a universal right. Educational achievement, professional advancement, wealth, life expectancy, all our measures of success are still umbilically tied to an individual's background rather than the talents they possess. So the question is, which political party can do something about it? Look, I'm sure Ed Miliband and David Cameron would say that their parties are parties of opportunity. No one's against opportunity. But the point is, they can't deliver it for everybody. There is no opportunity without a stronger economy to give people good jobs, business opportunities, the money to follow their dreams. That's why Labour is not the answer. And without a fairer society, you can't create opportunity for everyone instead of just those lucky few at the top. And that's why the Conservatives are not the answer. Fairness without a strong economy doesn't work. A strong economy without fairness doesn't work either. And as the last few weeks have now put beyond doubt, there's only one party with the head and the heart, the resolve and the compassion to deliver both, to deliver opportunity for everyone, and it is us. And it starts with giving people power over their lives. Powerlessness is the enemy of opportunity. It's why we care as passionately about civil liberties as we do about good schools. It's why blocking the so-called Snoopers Charter was as important as delivering a massive increase in free childcare. Because a Big Brother state which demands the storage of the websites you visit is as threatening to real freedom and opportunity as a state which fails to help toddlers get the support and care they need. And while we're on the subject, I say this to Theresa May: stop playing party politics with national security. Stop playing on people's fears simply to try and get your own way. Your communications data bill was disproportionate, disempowering. We blocked it once and we'll do it again. There are times when the state needs to keep its nose out of our lives, to give us the freedom to make the most of our lives. And there are times when the state needs to extend a helping hand so that everyone can make the most of their lives. That is a smart, liberal, enabling state. And at its heart are powerful citizens. But if there's one thing that I've learned over the last 4.5 years, it's that the hardest thing about being in power is getting vested interests to give up their hold on power. Just look at where we've been thwarted. Giving people a democratic say over their lawmakers in the House of Lords, blocked by Labour and the Conservatives. A clean-up of party funding to restrain the influence of big money, blocked by Labour and the Conservatives. The Conservatives have even told us in the most explicit terms, you can't have your so-called mansion tax because our donors won't wear it. So proud are they of this brazen act of self-interest, they even wrote to wealthy homeowners boasting about it in the hope of courting more cash. And then within hours of the historic Scotland vote on the 18th of September, when we were meant to be cracking on with the jointly agreed plan for further devolution, a plan that this party, by the way, will not see hijacked or diluted or delayed. When we were supposed to be working together to get on with delivering that plan, the two other parties, they were at it again. The Tories trying to impose an entirely, transparently self-serving system of Tory votes for English laws on the House of Commons, in order to give more say to their MPs. Labour ignoring the problem altogether in order to give more say to their MPs. Well, they can both forget it. Whatever reforms we will do will be fair and right by the British people, and that will be guaranteed by our MPs. And they still simply cannot grasp that spreading opportunity means putting people in control. In Scotland, Northern Ireland, Wales, in communities up and down England too. Now, we've done a lot to release Whitehall's grip. By the time the election is called next year, every single part of the United Kingdom, every nation, every city, our towns and villages, will all have more power than the day when the coalition was formed, just as we said. But I want us to go so much further, supporting strong, prosperous, empowered communities, able to shape their own futures. And to anyone who thinks that in the next Parliament we should cut our losses and give up on our ambitions for real, meaningful political reform, no way. This country deserves better than the tawdry Westminster politics we get from Labour and the Tories, and I am going to keep hammering away at the system every single day, because bit by bit, that system will break to let the people in. And if power is still hoarded at the centre, the ability for people to liberate themselves from the circumstances of their birth is still denied to far too many people. I have fought tirelessly to instill opportunity in the earliest years of a child's life. Did you know Michael Gove raided the budget for much-needed school places in order to fund his free school obsession? Did you see the frenzied bile from the Tory right against our plan to give young children at primary school a healthy meal at lunchtime? Have you ever heard the dated snobbery from some Conservatives against the value of vocational qualifications and good quality careers advice? Of all the fault lines which have opened up in this coalition government, the one that has been most revealing is the way in which self-proclaimed conservative educational reformers sought to suffocate almost every single initiative designed to instill opportunity at an early age for all children, not just some, because a world-class education system is one that releases the potential in all children, not just some. My mother worked as a teacher for children with dyslexia when myself and my brothers and sister were growing up. And those days, it wasn't as readily recognised that very bright children can be hampered by learning difficulties which may obscure their talents but don't make them any less bright. Those days, countless children were discarded by the education system because children were not treated as individuals. They were expected to conform to the rigours of the classroom or be left behind. And my mother drummed into us what seems so obvious today, that you don't write anyone off. You don't overlook anyone's talents. Given half a chance, everyone can shine. And for me, that is what our new commitment to expanding childcare to all 2, 3, and 4-year-olds is all about. That is what our new commitment to healthy lunches for all primary school children is all about. That is what our new commitment to helping with the travel costs faced by all college students is all about. That is what our new commitment to a qualified teacher in every classroom is all about. That is what protecting funding from cradle to college, even as we clear the deficit, is all about. Education. Opportunity. That is what the Liberal Democrats are all about. Almost exactly 13 years ago, Phil Willis and myself visited a number of schools in Denmark, Holland, and Sweden. And the idea of the pupil premium was born. And today it funds breakfast clubs, homework clubs. It helps involve parents who are otherwise disengaged. It gives teachers the time to focus on children, one-on-one. And the many wonderful, wonderful teachers I meet across the country, working in the noblest profession of all, tell me the ability to do that is priceless in unlocking the talents of every child. The thrill I get every time I hear from a teacher about how great they think the pupil premium is never diminishes. And it reminds me that in politics, being clear about what you want and then doggedly, stubbornly working away until you make it happen is what really counts. We are the party of education, and we always will be, because it is the driver of opportunity. Because if you want to spread opportunity, you can't just stop at today. You have to think about tomorrow too. And for that same reason, our next manifesto will contain something I can guarantee you that none of the others will. A commitment to 5 green laws. Laws that will commit British governments to reducing carbon from our electricity sector, create new legal targets for clean air and water, give everyone access to green space, massively boost energy efficiency and renewable energy, prioritise the shift to green cars, bring an end to dirty coal. Because Liberal Democrats understand that opportunity for everyone means thinking not just of this generation, but of future generations too. There are 2 other big commitments I'd like to single out today. And for me, they epitomise the way in which we're striving to spread opportunity wherever we can. And while I'm not going to get dragged into endless speculation about this or that red line in the event of another hung parliament, people, of course, have a right to know what our priorities are. Forget talk of deals. Let's just dwell on our values. This isn't about tactics in a negotiation. This is about what our values are and where we want to take the country. So the next priority I want to highlight is tax. Raising the point at which you start paying income tax to £12,500. Now, I know that there are some people here who think that I bang on too much about our success in raising the personal allowance from where we found it, just under £6,500, up to £10,500. But I don't think we bang on about it enough. It is, It is, in my view, quite remarkable that a party experiencing its first stint in government, which only has 9% of MPs in Westminster, should have succeeded in driving through the biggest and fairest transformation of our income tax system in a generation. If that isn't something to bang on about loud and proud, I really don't know what is. Over 3 million people on low pay, taken out of paying any tax at all. An £800 tax cut for over 24 million people. And with our new policy of an even higher allowance, nearly a million more people will pay no income tax. And 30 million people will be an additional £400 better off. Labour would never have made this change, because it's all about liberating people through their own hard work rather than making them more dependent on an overweening state. The Conservatives couldn't have been more explicit that it wasn't their priority during our budget negotiations, where year after year it was frequently referred to as your tax cut, Nick. Apparently, it's our tax cut in private, but it's their tax cut in public. In 2012, I'll never forget this, Danny and I said to the Conservatives, we said, let's go further and faster to cut people's income tax. It's possible now, so why wait? And George Osborne turned to me and he said, I don't want to deliver a Liberal Democrat budget. So he insisted instead on the Tory bit of the budget, a cut to the top rate of tax. I can't think of a better, simpler illustration of what sets the two coalition parties apart. Tories insisting on tax cuts for the few, Lib Dems insisting on tax cuts for the many. And when they say now that they've signed up to our plan to raise the personal allowance to £12,500, just scratch beneath the surface. They're giving a tax cut worth four times as much to the highest earners. And who pays for their income tax cut? You do. It's no secret. The Conservatives told you loud and clear last week what they want to do. Everything they promise will be paid for by cutting the support to the working age poor and cutting further and faster the money which goes to our schools, our police, our social care homes and other unprotected services. We, by contrast, we've set out how we'll fairly fund the first step of raising the personal allowance to £11,000 in the first year of the next Parliament. So the choice is clear. Unfunded, unfair Tory tax cuts or Lib Dem tax cuts which are funded and fair. The difference is that they want to cut taxes for the wealthiest, paid for by the working age poor. We want to cut taxes for working people, paid for by the wealthiest. And then there's one more policy, one I care about passionately. Mental health. The second-class status given to mental health in the NHS was the subject of the first question I ever asked at Prime Minister's Questions. I have campaigned to end the Cinderella treatment of mental health services ever since, because it threatens the opportunities available to hundreds and thousands of our fellow citizens. Anxiety, panic attacks, depression, anorexia, bulimia, self-harm, bipolar disorder. These and many other mental health conditions are one of the last remaining taboos in our society. And yet, they will affect one in four people. Now, much progress has been made. People now speak out in the way they never did before. We have put mental health on the same legal footing in the NHS as physical health. We're massively expanding talking therapies and transforming the help children can get as they move into adulthood. But there's still a long, long way to go. I want this to be a country where a young dad chatting at the school gates will feel as comfortable discussing anxiety or depression as the mum who's explaining how she sprained her ankle. There are many brave campaigners who've been leading the way, not least our very own Paul Burstow and Norman Lamb. And they deserve medals for all the tireless work they've done in government. Earlier this year, I visited a group of young mental health service users to talk about their experiences of the care they received. And they sat around in a circle, away from the television cameras, these brave, articulate young men and women. And with astonishing honesty and candour, they told me, a complete stranger, all about the things they'd been through. The despair, the shame, the bullying, the parents and siblings who didn't know how to cope with them. And for some of them, the very darkest thoughts imaginable, including attempts to take their own lives. And I heard about their recoveries too, their resolve. With the right treatment, their determination, some of them just teenagers, to deal with their issues and live happy and full lives. If they can speak out to me, I can speak up for them. So this morning, I announced that next year, for the first time ever, we will introduce national waiting times for patients with mental health conditions. Labour introduced waiting times in physical health. We will do the same for the many people struggling with conditions that you often can't see, that we often don't talk about, but which are just as serious. So if you are waiting for talking therapies to help you with your depression, you will be seen within 6 weeks, 18 weeks, at an absolute maximum, just as if you are waiting for an operation on your hip. If you're a young person experiencing psychosis for the first time, you will be seen within 2 weeks, something we're going to roll out across the country, just as if you suspect you have cancer. If you're having a breakdown, if you're thinking of harming yourself, for any emergency which takes you to A&E, you'll get the help you need, just as if you'd gone to hospital with chest pains or following an accident. These, friends, are big, big changes. And in government again, the Liberal Democrats will commit to completing this overhaul of our mental health services, ending the discrimination against mental health for good. And while I suspect not everybody in this party is going to agree, I can tell you now, I want this smack bang on the front page of our next manifesto. One of a small number of top priorities, because this is a great liberal cause. Let's be the first political party to give mental health the status it deserves. For the countless people who are suffering alone, who are failing to get the treatment they need on time and in the right way, who are being denied the chance to get on in their lives, for the families who are being strained to breaking point, for a Britain that is compassionate, open, and leads the way. And to make sure this and all other care is properly funded, this week we have set out how we'll pay for the rising costs of our treasured NHS. Everybody now accepts it needs more money, and it's a good thing that all the parties have chosen to talk about this at their conference. But it's still the case that only one party has spelt out a credible plan to pay for it. Not only will the Liberal Democrats protect the NHS budget in real terms, we will raise an extra £1 billion for it every year by ending three different tax breaks which benefit the highest earners, including scrapping George Osborne's ludicrous shares for rights gimmick. And once we have finished the job on the deficit and public spending is rising, we're committing ourselves to ensuring NHS spending rises too. Words in speeches are all well and good. We all love our NHS, but what it needs is money, and that's what the Liberal Democrats will guarantee. Friends, between now and the election, our opponents, they'll do everything they can to do us down, and we'll give as good as we get. And that's okay in the rough and tumble of politics. But what isn't okay is our motives being caricatured. Not me, not you, not our party, not our reasons for wanting to govern again. And we mustn't allow coalition to be caricatured either. This coalition government has provided the country with the political stability without which the economic recovery and hundreds and thousands of new jobs would never have materialised. I often hear the Conservatives claim that the economic recovery is George Osborne's recovery. Pretty rich, coming from a Treasury where the sole person responsible for the really tough job of repairing the damage to our public finances is a Liberal Democrat. And people know the truth. They know it. After the 2010 election, the Conservatives couldn't have formed a government and secured this economic recovery without the Liberal Democrats. And the Liberal Democrats could not have secured this economic recovery without the Conservatives. It's called coalition. And in my judgment, it is most likely Britain will have more in the future. Of course, that doesn't mean that when there are real disagreements and disputes with our coalition partners, that we shouldn't talk about them. On the contrary, don't hold back. Now, I know some of you find that harder than others. I mean, Vince, you've got to start telling us what you really think about the Tories. But that isn't the same as seeking to wash our hands of the whole thing. And that's something I will never do. Because I don't believe the British public would buy it for a second. They know we've been in government for this Parliament. We're not suddenly going to pretend that it had nothing to do with us. Because I'm immensely proud of what we've achieved. And I don't want the Tories claiming all the credit for everything we've done. And because I never lose sight of the fact that simply forming a successful coalition unlocks the grip on power of the old establishment parties. It undermines the soulless pendulum swing of red, blue, blue, red politics, because it destroys once and for all their increasingly desperate claims that single party government is the only kind of government fit for our country. As someone who has grown more actually, not less impatient with the establishment during my time in office, I've realised that what the vested interests would relish most is to eject us from office before our time is up. What disrupts those same vested interests most is seeing this government through. So however tempting it might be, we should never play our opponent's game. I will not, no matter how much anyone goads me to do it, seek to distance us from the achievements of this government, because it would only play into the hands of those who say we should never have been in government at all. I believe, despite the febrile, angry mood of our times, there are millions of our fellow citizens who still long for a politics of reason, of fairness, and of decency. In 7 months, the people of this country will need to make a choice. You can pick a Labour Party, which has learnt no lessons from the past, and which, left to its own devices, will jeopardise the economy all over again. You can pick a Conservative Party, which doesn't share your values, and which, left to its own devices, will make poor people poorer while it keeps cutting away at the services everybody needs. Ed Miliband You might have forgotten what you did to our economy, but we have not. And the British people don't want a Labour government running their country, racking up debts for our children and grandchildren to pay. David Cameron, you can copy our ideas, but you will never imitate our values. And the British people don't want a Conservative government running their country which only looks after its own kind. It is left, friends, to our party, to us, to work our hearts out each and every day to give the people of Britain a stronger economy and a fairer society. We will do everything we can to ensure you and your family have the opportunities to get on. In that Britain, we can defeat the politics of blame, of grievance and fear. And we have 7 short months to tell people, to show people there is still a party that speaks to the decent British values they hold. So let our opponents say what they will. After all the knocks and setbacks and bruises, we will go to the country with our heads held high. Say what they will. We will go to the country with a plan that builds on everything we've achieved, with a credible promise of more. Say what they will. We are now the only party holding firm to decent, liberal values while anger and blame are on the rise. The only party refusing to trade in fear because we believe that the British people want desperately from their politics what they want is hope. The only party who are as economically competent as we are socially fair. A party of the head and the heart, of compassion and resolve. The only party who says no matter who you are, no matter where you are from, we will do everything in our power to help you shine. Thank you.